you need to understand that people may be coming to see you because of physical or mental health, because of their stresses around finance as well. And yet, as practitioners, we have this story in our heads that we are telling ourselves that in regards to our clients, that if I charge, that I will not be able to serve. And I see time and time again with the practitioners that I work with that we can get the mechanic side of things down, but we really have to start with that mindset. And when they really see the two come together, just like you said, Megan, that's when the magic starts to happen.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to episode 211. It is March. The sun is shining. Spring is in the air, which means it's the perfect time to start to talk about money. Don't be scared off. Don't be scared off, because we're going to start to talk about money and finances and personal empowerment and systems to incorporate into your small business so that you can take control of the financial part of your life and your health once and for all. My guest today, April Stroink, and I, we share a very similar philosophy, and that is, in order to ultimately achieve solid health, we need to have a system that helps us manage our wealth. And I didn't mean for that to sound like a really horrendous poem. It's just that it's the truth. You know, if I lift up the veil, and I talk about this in today's podcast, I lift up the veil on the core sources of stress in the thousands of patients that I treated over my career. Relationships and money were always at the top of the list. I believed that to be an effective practitioner, we have to tackle our own demons with respect to money mindset and management, and for us to ultimately achieve strong health in our life and in our world, we need to take control of that financial piece as well. April is a Profit First certified practitioner. She works with small business owners to help them develop systems within their businesses so that the money piece does not control them, so that they can truly move towards that state of freedom that entrepreneurs truly desire. It was an awesome conversation, and I'm super excited to introduce you to April Stroink. April Stroink, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
Thank you. I am super excited to be here, Megan.
Well, we're just going to jump right into it. And I think this is such a timely topic. I've been dropping the discussion of the connection between health and wealth and our money mindset for the last little while. It seems to always be the elephant in the room mm-hmm. when you're hanging out with the heart-centered entrepreneurs. And I think we just need to dive right into it. So April, can you give everyone a background as to who you are and why you so passionately make the connection between these two concepts?
Absolutely. So I've been in this space for over 20 years, and I started out with a national financial firm and was classically trained, if you will, as a financial advisor. So getting people to retirement, making sure their safety net is in place. And then what I came to realize in my practice, and especially in the conversations that I was having with my clients, exactly like you just said, the money was really, especially around mindset and emotion, was the elephant in the room. And I would say I had excellent training with a company that I was with, but we never, ever talked about emotion and how money is emotional. So in my life, in addition to running my financial practice, my husband and I also owned a retail business. And as you know, as small business owners, money is super emotional. And what I started to see is just drawing these parallels between money and emotion and also health. My mother has a saying that health is wealth. And I always started to challenge her that wealth equals health as well. From all of my studies that I have seen, that if you, financial health is one of the pillars of full health. And if you do have your house in order, what we're seeing is that you have less mental stress, you have better physical health. It all ties into each other. And even though we've made strides in mental health, not as much as we should have yet or getting there, we still don't talk about money.
We don't talk about money, and especially to our kids. And I was writing something that I'm going to post on Instagram in the next few days. And it was the quote none of us ever said, which is, I just want my kids to have the same money mindset hangups as I do when they get older. Said no one ever, right? And it, what's interesting is that we wouldn't wish the financial stress that we can all incur. We would never wish that on anyone else. And yet, we don't do anything to manage it. And that is a sweeping statement, although it is also a sweeping epidemic amongst the mindset of many entrepreneurs. And I'm excited to kind of start to crack that open.
Oh, completely. If you think of our early teachers in anything in our lives, our parents are our first money teachers. And it's really interesting in all of the studies that I have read, you either do one of two things. You exactly mimic what you see in the home, or you do the polar opposite. So I'll give you sort of my example. Megan, you and I talked about this. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, as I know that you did as well, which you'd think we'd run kicking and screaming from it. But anyway, here we are.
Yet.
And my dad was one of those people that just, he seemed to make it rain on the surface. And we had sort of the best of the best. And then it all kind of came crashing down on him. And my story has been the polar opposite, is that I went straightly into this place of scarcity and just making sure I saved every penny and was completely frugal. And when I bought my first car, it had no bells and whistles on it, completely everything manual. So I went that polar opposite, which isn't healthy either. And then a lot of times when I teach my masterclass, is one of the first things is I ask, what is your first memory of money? And it's really interesting how people parallel what are the discussions that they've had with your parents? Because again, your parents are your first teachers. So what you see in the home, you will mimic in your life. And I grew up in Nova Scotia, and financial literacy is not part of the high school curriculum or any of the curriculum in Nova Scotia, which I've been championing for. So we're not taught about it in the home because we're, or if we are, we're taught maybe an unhealthy relationship with it. We're not taught about it in our formal education, and yet we become adults and we're supposed to know what to do with it.
It's so fascinating. And yes, we did have this conversation about our upbringing. And I'm now that I lean deep into this particular topic because I'm fascinated by it. And the thing that I've realized in my own life is that I'm only ever given what I can handle. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a household, and I've shared this on the podcast before, where my allowance was directly tied to my acquisition of financial acumen. So I read a book, we talked about it, you knew something, or like I could regurgitate the core concepts, and my dad would increase my allowance. I had to do other things, but that was what it was tied to. But what was fascinating is we did a lot of conversation around mechanics of money, but we didn't delve into conversations around the mindset piece of money. Mm-hmm. And I remember for a long time in my own career, I was like, this, I don't get it. Like, I know exactly how to manage the money piece, but what I hadn't spent time doing was leaning into the mindset piece. And when I combined those two notions together, everything started to accelerate. And so I really think that it's important to acknowledge that there's two sides of the conversation around money. There's the mindset piece and there's the mechanical piece. Mm-hmm. And I really feel strongly that you need to have both of those elements in place before you're going to start to see that real acceleration of either in your life.
Absolutely. Like I just said, I had the mechanics down pat, but the mindset piece was constantly keeping me in scarcity, even though I knew what to do with it.
Yeah. And that's part of the fun and challenge of entrepreneurship is all of the life lessons and all of the personal growth that can happen alongside it. And what I've really come to realize is that when good people have the opportunity to earn good incomes, they can do good things in the world. And once I started to see that, it completely shifted what happened for me with respect to money. And I'm wondering if we can back up a little bit, because I know you'll share similar philosophies, but both of us work with a cohort of individuals who, many of whom live by the mantra, I just want to help people, as if that vocation and that intention is incongruent with building any level of wealth. What do you want to say to those entrepreneurs?
Oh my goodness. What I say on a daily basis is that it is okay to make money. And in fact, by you making good money inside of your practice, then you will be able to serve those people in your community that you have been put here to serve in a way that is fully holistic. And what I mean by that is that, as we were talking about before, that there is such a link between health and wealth. And if you, as a practitioner, are feeling financial stress, it's going to be shown in your practice. And on the flip side, you need to understand that people may be coming to see you because of physical or mental health, because of their stresses around finance as well. And yet, as practitioners, we have this story in our heads that we are telling ourselves that, in regards to our clients, that if I charge, that I will not be able to serve. And I see time and time again with the practitioners that I work with that we can get the mechanic side of things down, but we really have to start with that mindset. And when they really see the two come together, just like you said, Megan, that's when the magic starts to happen.
100%. And if I were to just lift the veil on, we would run into, obviously, as a practitioner, I had an intake form for patients. And one of the questions we asked on our intake form is, where would you identify as your primary source of stress in your life? Mm-hmm. And we categorized that. We kept this data because we had five things to choose from, or an other category. The top sources of stress in almost everyone's life were relationships and money. And it didn't matter how much money people had. I mean, we had some very wealthy clients, and it was still a consistent source of stress in their life, often for different reasons as things start to grow. And so, you know, as a cohort of individuals who address the root cause of the problem, I am forever fascinated that this is an area where everyone literally just sweeps under the rug because they don't want to dive into it. And I couldn't agree with you more that understanding financial health and how to get there and how to wrap your mindset around it is going to absolutely distinguish you when it comes to how you're working with your patients. You're going to find that you have more and more of these conversations because there's this sudden acknowledgement of the fact that it's the elephant in the room. Where do you start with people around the mindset piece? Because it's not going to work. My dad used to say to me sometimes when I would say, I can't get it, or this is really bothering me. I mean, it's such a man thing to say, but I don't mean to generalize. What he would say to me is, we'll just get over it. And so if I said to him, like, well, I'm struggling with this mindset thing around money, he would literally look at me and be like, well, just get over it. It doesn't work. Where do you send people to start their journey of getting over it?
Well, it's really interesting what you say in regards to the men's side of it, because I believe very strongly that women approach money differently than men do. And it's interesting because when I work with clients, I always start on the personal finance side, no matter what. So even if they're coming to me in regards to their practice, I want to start with the lifestyle congruency part, because I believe very strongly that the way you show up in your business in regards to your money mindset is the same way that you show up in your personal life. You can't tell me that on one side you have these emotions in regards to your money, and then in the business it's completely different. So I actually start on the personal finance side, because I want to see what does the business owner need to take home from their business on a consistent monthly basis to fuel their lifestyle. I so often see that the business is running the owner versus the other way around. So I want to really see, okay, what is your financial why? We talk about so much about our why, which I think is awesome, but what's your financial why for being an entrepreneur? So I do a deep dive into, first of all, the first meeting that I have, I ask that the person's partner comes along as well, because if we're doing healthy financial habits and we're building healthy financial habits into our personal life, into our business, if the person that you are spending the most amount of time with is not on board, you're not going to have as great a success. It's kind of like somebody quitting smoking and then the person you spend the most amount of time with is smoking a pack a day. It just won't work. So in that first meeting with a couple, and it's interesting because I usually have the first contact with the woman and then the man comes along just to make things copacetic in the household. And then it's really interesting is halfway through the program, I start to see it really switch. So in that first meeting though, I really ask the questions of how they work together as a couple with their money. Do they have separate accounts? Do they have their accounts together? What is their first memory of money together as a couple? How do they work together in their decision process? What does financial freedom mean to each of them? I ask each of them these questions. And Megan, it is so interesting what happens during that hour together. And there have been times that this is the first time in the couple's relationship that they've ever asked these questions or that they've ever had these discussions with each other. There have been times when I've just asked, would you like me to leave the room at this moment? And I have left the room so that they can continue on with this discussion. As far as relationships are concerned in Canada, the number one reason for separation in this country is due to financial stress and financial issues, because again, we just aren't talking about it. So that's where I start with. And once we go through understanding their mindset and how they work together as a couple and the goals they want to have together as a couple, because we want them to be rowing in the same financial boat. Otherwise, they're not going to reach those goals. And from there, I actually, I have an analyst that I work with, and we analyze 4 months of somebody's spending habits. And the reason why we do that is because, again, of our mindset around money. If you put together your own budget, you are going to rationalize the heck out of every single purchase that you make, right? But if you have somebody third party going through who is committed to your success but not attached emotionally, they are going to put the numbers in black and white. So we come back for a second meeting, and in that meeting, it's probably the first time they've seen their entire financial life in front of them. And we start with their reality data or their spending habits. And in a very non-judgmental way, I just let them know, this is where you are behaviorally spending. This is why you're not reaching your goals. This is what you need to do to correct that. And the interesting thing about that exercise is that then gives me the number that I work with in the business to say, okay, we know this is what you need from the business, to be taken from the business, to support your financial lifestyle and the goals and dreams of your family. How do we reverse engineer that into the top line revenue in order to make that happen? And then I'm a profit first professional. I was really gravitated to profit first because it works with your behaviors and it works with behavioral finance. And then we run through that whole system once we get on that side.
Well, I want to break down what the profit first methodology looks like, because it's so smart. It's so brilliant. I remember the first time I was introduced to it as an entrepreneur, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I need. And I want to underscore one of the things that you were talking about there. And that is this idea of not outsourcing the money management conversation and responsibility to your partner. And even if you're not the biggest breadwinner in your family, I think there's a really critical energetic acknowledgement when you have full transparency around what's happening with respect to those finances. And also you have ownership over some element of those finances. And I feel like that is a behavior that I also see passed along in relationships where you maybe had modeling in your own household where one of your parents controlled the finances more than the other. And you find you move into your relationship with your partner and you're very much okay to default into that same zone. And I'm really passionate about women in particular ensuring that they have control over what happens with respect to household finances and having a capacity to contribute in some way. That doesn't mean you're making all the money necessarily, although that would be awesome, but that you have full acknowledgement as to what's going on.
Completely. In my practice, as I said, it's primarily I work with women practitioners and they are coming to me and seeking just exactly what you say. They want to step into their money power. They want to understand what's happening in their practice and they want to understand what's happening in their personal finances at home as well. I believe that one person in the household should be the CFO just for complete organizational purposes, but it is so important that both spouses be involved. When I first started in my financial career, I actually had to deliver a life insurance policy to a grieving widow. And it wasn't until I walked through the door that she realized that her husband had canceled two of the three policies. And so she's already reeling from the death of the spouse. And because she had abdicated her finances to her husband, she had 75% less coming in than what she had anticipated. And let me tell you, that was a very difficult conversation.
Absolutely. And I agree with you on the CFO allocation. I take that role in our household, but it's really important to me that my husband's involved in the decisions and he understands the decisions I'm making because I don't want the sole financial responsibility. I want a board of directors at my disposal with respect to those pieces because I just don't want to own that burden. Okay, I want to talk about profit first because
yes.
It is so super cool when it comes to the movement of money within our businesses. And it is a really effective strategy. If you're one of those people where money's sitting in your bank account, you're like, oh, what am I going to spend it on? This is a super awesome system to help you organize away from that money mindset trap. Do you want to take us through at a high level, April, what the Profit First methodology is all about?
Absolutely. And Megan, I'm the same way. When I first came across it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been sort of looking for my whole life. And the reason being is exactly what you said. It is a, let's face it. We are not programmed in our brains, most of us, unless we're an accountant or bookkeeper, to look at our financial statements on the daily and to glean from them the story that they're telling us and make our decisions based on that. It's just not the way that our brain is wired. So the way that our brain is wired as an entrepreneur is that we take a look at our bank account and we see money there and we're like, awesome. We can spend it. And then we completely forget that our annual insurance is coming due or our licensing is coming due and holy whatever, I just didn't. Right.
Yeah.
So what Profit First does is it's not something new. It really is. Mike Michalowicz has taken the old fashioned idea of different envelopes and now has applied it to business. And it's so brilliant because it's all based on Parkinson's law, which says that if you have a full tube of toothpaste, you will put all kinds of toothpaste on your toothbrush, but then as you get less and less toothpaste, you do everything you can to squeeze that out. I actually have one sitting on the counter right now. So what we do is we work with that to say, okay, well, if I trick my brain into thinking that there's less in my bank account, I will actually become more innovative and I will spend less, or I will spend within my means. So what we do is we set up 5 different bank accounts. So you have one bank account that your revenue all comes into, and from there you allocate a portion to a profit account, to owner's pay, to your taxes, and then your operating expenses. And based on your income, there's different allocations. But you do this in a methodical manner, and you do that in this that order every time. So you always take your profit first. That's where it comes from. And by doing that, when you look at your bank account and you use this bank balance accounting, you will see right off the get-go, oh, I only have this amount in operating expenses. So if I am looking to take another course, or I am looking to buy something inside of my business, I have this amount that I can do that in. And then there's also the relief of knowing my HST is all taken care of. That's not always applicable to our practitioners, but the sales tax is taken care of, the income tax is taken care of, and lo and behold, I am paying myself a market-based wage, and I'm now acting like a CEO of my company, and I have profit allocations to myself as a shareholder.
Which is so key, because I have so many practitioners coming to me and other business owners who are like, I think I'd like to sell my business. And then we go back and we look at things and we're like, well, it hasn't been particularly profitable. They're like, I know, that's just on paper, but in reality. And that's just it. Is part of this is that forward thinking about what are we going to do with this asset that you are building. And it really stems from this philosophy of paying yourself first. And the pay yourself first philosophy is about paying your future self first. It's not go out and shop. It's paying your future self, which is what that profit account is really all about. I love it.
Absolutely. There is 2 ways that you pay yourself as a business owner. The first way is that you take a market-based wage. And to find that out is if you were working for somebody else, what would you be getting paid? Or if you had somebody coming in to do the work that you're doing, what would you pay them? The second way is that if you are investing in your business, and in some cases it's our biggest investment, in some cases the only investment, you need a return on that investment. And yet, what happens is exactly what you're saying. If you're plowing back your profits into your business, that is not profit. That is actually an expense on your profit and loss account. And I have sold 5 businesses in my lifetime. And I'm here to tell you that when somebody is looking at your balance sheet and they are looking at your profit and loss account and they see that you are not paying yourself or you're not paying yourself a market-based wage, that is worth less than the person who is taking income from their business. So if we're looking to build an asset-based business and that is the goal, you have got to be showing that you're taking an income from the business, because why else would somebody buy it?
And honestly, why else would you have a business?
Oh, yes.
We're not going to take some money, but you know, it is one of those pieces when we're looking at all the different ways that we can leverage money coming into our business. And I know as entrepreneurs, and especially, you know, early stage entrepreneurs, as we're stuck in hustle mode and then finally starting to see some cash flow, there's a few things that everyone talks about wanting to have. They're like, oh, I want the passive income. And they're like, maybe I want diversified income. And maybe I want some other kind of income. And the one piece I encourage so many practitioners and business owners to aim for first is just that you have predictable income. Mm-hmm. And what I love about profit first and about planning and leaning into understanding your own finances, because it's not just about this system, is that your money can't buy happiness. But let me tell you what predictable income can buy you: massive peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Massive peace of mind. And so if you've already done the work, which so many of the individuals I hang out with have already done the self-work, they're all pretty happy people, but they have this massive source of stress that is the lack of predictable income in their life. I'm telling you, you get that rolling in your business and it is life-changing in terms of who you are and how you view this entity of business in your world. I'd love for you to share a little bit about what you've seen with people, but like that is the first jumping off point as an entrepreneur where I'm like, oh, you might mistake money for buying you happiness right now, because it is such a relief when you know you're going to be able to earn consistently from month to month.
Absolutely. And what I love about the Profit First system as well is that it shows you that until you are earning that predictable income month over month, don't even think about growing. And this is a mistake that I see entrepreneurs make all the time, and guilty as charged, is growing for the sake of growth and believing that increasing top line revenue means more profits. And that is not how this all goes down. It's, again, back to Parkinson's law, that demand will always meet supply. So we want to make sure that we are having certain profit levels and as well taking that market-based wage from our business, that predictable income that you speak of. And until that's happening, you do not even think about moving into growth mode. Once you get to that place, then what I like about the system is it shows you, okay, here's the next bucket. And once you've hit that capacity and you're in that next bucket, then let's look about growth. And just using this system as well, just to help you move along in the trajectory of your business.
So if we take it from here, you know, this notion of creating profitability and having a consistent income, which again, I cannot underscore enough, will change your life. When we look at this from the opposite side, what mistakes are people making? And you alluded to this attempt to grow before we have something steady. What are some of the other mistakes that you are seeing people make?
The biggest mistake that I see business owners is chasing top line and really getting away from the core of their business. And what I mean by that is, and you talked about it in regards to your article actually in Forbes about having purpose. And what I see happening is that, especially during this pandemic, is this whole action for the sake of action, busyness for the sake of busyness, throwing anything against the wall to see if it sticks. And it's not even part of your core proficiencies or your life's purpose. And what happens is we're always chasing this. And I'll just give you the example that Mike Michalowicz uses in the book. So somebody comes to clean out your gutters, and while he's up there, he also sees that your lawn needs to be mowed. So he decides to mow your lawn too. And while he's mowing your lawn, he sees that you have a crack in your foundation. So he's going to fix the crack in your foundation too. So it turned from a $1,000 job to a $5,000 job, but he had to go out and buy a lawnmower, and he had to go out and buy cement for the foundation. And so his expenses at the end of the day were $5,000, where the person who just stuck to cleaning out the gutter and did five of those jobs every day, he actually ended up with $5,000 in his pocket. Whereas the person who was trying to serve many instead of his core competency, yes, he had larger top line revenue, but at the end of the day, he had less in his jeans. And I see this happen time and time again.
And there's phases to business too. And when you're in that first phase of business, which is a hustle phase, we get scrappy sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I need more revenue. I need more money. I need more things. And I think that's when the big shiny objects, which in this case is fixing the foundation, sometimes pull us away from that core purpose, as opposed to really focusing on the fundamentals and growing in alignment with our core competencies. I think it is such a key point. What about some of the mindset blocks that you are observing in small business owners?
I think a lot of us just don't dare to dream big enough. I love the saying that shoot for the moon, and if you don't make it, you're going to land in the stars. And I think one of the things that we do, I dare say, especially where I'm from, is just this capacity to stay small. And by staying small, what we do is we really sort of shoot ourselves in the foot, if you will. And I think that as entrepreneurs, we have a duty to our community to be the best that we can be, and really just diving deep and understanding how money can actually be of service is really important. You hit the nail on the head earlier when you said, Megan, about that you've seen lots of what we would call quote unquote traditional wealthy people who are still stressed about money. And it's just keeping ourselves in this place of scarcity. I'm seeing happening time and time again with our entrepreneurs.
I love that. Do you have some top resources, some favorite books that you'd love to recommend around either the money mindset piece or the management of money?
Absolutely. My favorite on the mindset piece is The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. And in that book, she really talks about the wealthiest people in the world have probably one of the biggest struggles with scarcity. It seems the more that we have, the more we want to grab onto it and just keep it tight. So that's one of my favorites. And one of my favorite books that I read every year is The E-Myth. It's a classic. Oh,
it is a classic.
Profit First, of course, by Mike Michalowicz. And Big Profits, Big Results is one that I like to read on the daily or weekly as well. I love where it talks about this whole idea of taking a market-based wage and not to really confuse your net income with your income. And also it has a really great model on our human resources and how to really, one of the biggest struggles that entrepreneurs have is with their staff. And it really helps put the numbers on that as well. So that's another one of my favorites.
Those are some great, great choices. I flipped open my Audible because I was like, oh, I know there's lots of books on money sitting in my library here. One of my favorites is Happy Pocketful of Money, which is not on Audible, but it is on my bedside table. And it's classic. Like it's just amazing. And if you know you need to start somewhere with money mindset, it's a fantastic one to have a look at. I also really love Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. I just feel like it too falls into that classic category. And those are two that I will often go back to. And then Denise Duffield Thomas wrote one called Get Rich, Lucky Bitch. And I like that one too. I just find it got some practical mindset pieces. And I love that it's written by a woman. And there's an energy to women who lean into money. There's an energy to, my friend Jill Stanton just dropped a new podcast called The Millionaire Girls Club. And she and I love to talk about money. We love being able to talk about it, being fully autonomous and the power of contribution that can move along with it. So that's another resource that people can check out is her podcast and her conversations. April, I know that we've got something special coming up with you in the next few weeks in terms of a masterclass for people who are joining us in our CEO program. And I'm wondering if you can just give us a bit of an overview in terms of how you teach people and where you start when it comes to learning a little bit more about the Profit First methodology, but just money management in their business.
Absolutely. So yes, the masterclass is Profit in Practice. And in that time together, we are going to learn the four principles of Profit First. And really, on the mindset side, we're really going to peel back the onion, if you will, in regards to how charging what we are worth and stepping into our value serves our community. So in that masterclass where we're wrapping around the principles of Profit First, we're really going to get into the philosophy and the mindset of how this all works. So combining, like we were talking about before, the mechanics and the mindset of money management.
Amazing. I cannot wait to offer and share that with our audience. I feel like this is a perfect place to make a transition in the interview to something I called our KPIs. So just like we have key performance indicators in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got four rapid fire questions for you.
I heard about this.
It's like everyone gets a little bit scared. Then there's nothing scary. What is your most recommended book? Of all time, if we had to pick one, you're like, oh, I just want to give this to everybody.
It would be Profit First.
Love it. What's your favorite health hack?
Oh my gosh, making sure that my gym clothes are out and ready the night before.
Yes, I hear you on that. How would you define your purpose?
I want to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty.
Amazing. And last question for you, April. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh my gosh. No pressure. So many debates on that. Oh, born.
Love it. Decisive and to the point. You're up to so many amazing things. Where can we send people to learn more about your work, April?
Absolutely. So you can find out about my work on my website. It's pretty easy, aprilstroink.ca. Also on Facebook and under the same, April Stroink, and on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, we're going to hook everyone up in our show notes. April, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciated the conversation.
Me as well. Thank you, Megan.
Anthropology is the study and science of what makes entrepreneurs tick. It's the confluence of the mindset, strategic thinking, and health that we bring to the table as contributors, as purpose seekers, as individuals building out a better tomorrow. The work that we do on the Anthropology podcast impacts the mindset, the business tactics, and the health of those individuals who are working hard to change the world, to leave a legacy for the future. The best way that we can reach more people with the message of the Anthropology podcast is if you help us share it. If the message that we shared in today's episode is something that resonates with you, or if you know someone who would benefit from hearing it, please send it to them directly. And if you have felt moved by the content that we have shared, I would love it if you could leave a review wherever it is that you pick up your podcast. Until next week, live life on, in, and with purpose. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker, and I will talk to you real soon.